This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 559 of the genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. April 17th is Palestinian Prisoners' Day. According to the Palestinian prisoners' rights group Adamir, 63 Palestinian prisoners and detainees have died in Israeli prisons and detention camps since October 7, 2023, including at least 40 Palestinians from Gaza and a child, what the legal center Adala calls, quote, a staggering figure that reflects the scale of violence, medical neglect, and appalling conditions Palestinians face in Israeli prisons. As of April 2025, according to the rights group Hamoked, the Israel Prison Service is holding nearly 9,800 Palestinians under the classification of security detainees and prisoners, including 3,498 administrative detainees held without charge or trial. Adamir says that after October 7, 2023, quote, Israeli prisons and detention camps transformed into sites of vengeance, where appalling torture methods and extrajudicial killings became commonplace. In these facilities, inmates endured unimaginable suffering, facing extreme physical and psychological abuse, including brutal beatings and threats of death. Additionally, harsh practices such as prolonged solitary confinement resulted in the deaths of numerous prisoners, all in blatant violation of international laws that outlaw torture and premeditated murder, acts that undeniably constitute war crimes demanding accountability. In this regard, Adamir has documented over 739 cases throughout 2024 across various prisons and the detention centers in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, confirming that every detainee experienced one or more forms of torture or inhumane or degrading treatment. Meanwhile, Israel has attacked all areas of the Gaza Strip, while for nearly seven consecutive weeks it has closed all the crossings, banning the entry of food, fuel, medicines, construction vehicles, and essential supplies, driving Palestinians into multiple crises of starvation, displacement, and unmitigated trauma. Ahmad Bazarol, the emergency coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Gaza, said on Wednesday that, quote, Gaza has been turned into a mass grave of Palestinians and those coming to their assistance. We are witnessing in real time the destruction and forced displacement of the entire population in Gaza. Since Israel resumed its mass-scale attacks on March 18th, approximately 1,700 people have been killed and more than 4,300 have been injured, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, as the last partially functioning hospitals remain out of medications, supplies, fuel, clean water, and are routinely bombed and attacked by Israeli forces. 420,000 Palestinians have also been newly displaced over the last 4 weeks of attacks. Before dawn on Thursday, April 17th, Israeli airstrikes across Gaza targeted displaced families living in tents in three separate places, in Mawasi Khan Yunis and in Deir al-Balah in the central Gaza Strip, and in Jabalia in the north. Journalists and eyewitnesses reported that the tents were engulfed in flames and the victims, including many children, were burned alive, with bystanders desperately trying to put the fires out. A physician in northern Gaza, Dr. Izzedine Shehab, who has been narrating this genocide on social media while caring for his patients, stated earlier this week that, quote, after 556 days, Gaza is no longer a place. It is an experiment, a question posed to humanity. How long can a population be bombed, starved, and displaced before it ceases to exist? And how quietly can this be done before the world looks away for good? Over 60,000 are dead, 250,000 wounded, 1 million living in tents. This is not collateral damage, it is arithmetic. The children no longer go to school, the elderly die without medicine, The youth know that they will not grow old. These are not military targets. They are the very fabric of a society being erased. Those are the words of Dr. Izzedine Shehab, writing from northern Gaza earlier this week. On Sunday, April 13th, just after 1:30 in the morning, the Israeli army issued forced evacuation orders to patients and medical staff inside the Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza City. And then Israel bombed it in an attack that Euromed Human Rights Monitor called the, quote, targeting of Gaza City's last refuge for the sick and wounded, who should always be protected, and of medical personnel working under catastrophic conditions to save lives. In the dark, hospital staff and patients were forced to leave the hospital on gurneys and on foot. Israeli warplanes then launched two missiles at the hospital, completely destroying the laboratory, pharmacy, and emergency department, according to Al-Mizan Center for Human Rights. The hospital's church and other sections also sustained severe damage, the group added. The attack resulted in the death of a 13-year-old child who had lost access to critical medical care during the evacuation. According to the Palestinian Ministry of Health, the attack completely disabled the hospital and destroyed its CT scanning and radiology services, which were the only such services available in all of Gaza City. The Al-Ahli Hospital is one of Gaza's oldest medical institutions, established in 1882. Affiliated with the Episcopal Church in Jerusalem, it has long served as a vital healthcare provider for Gaza's population, Al-Mizan stated. Our listeners will remember that it was the first hospital to be bombed by the Israeli army in October 2023, killing hundreds of Palestinians in that first attack 18 months ago. And with no repercussions from the Biden administration and the rest of the so-called international community, of course, Israel has bombed every single hospital and medical facility since. Sunday's attack was the fifth time the Al-Ahli Hospital has been bombed. Dr. Sam Attar, a Chicago-based physician working at Al-Ahli Hospital, recorded a message for Sky News correspondent Alex Crawford later in the day after the attacks. You can hear the Israeli drones buzzing overhead.
A lot of the hospital staff left. I just wasn't going to leave all those kids with their parents and all those other patients all alone. I couldn't imagine that. Many of them need pain medications, medications for infections, and none of us knew how long it was going to last. And we were also treating patients that were injured in the streets, and we didn't have much, but sometimes all you need is oxygen, an IV, a good nurse, and an extra set of hands. And three of the nurses decided to stay, one side decided to stay. We really didn't know what was going on or how long it would last. Lasted 6 hours, but it was a very long 6 hours. We felt cut off and isolated. Everyone was worried the army would enter the complex. But right now, we're good and grateful. And we're picking up the pieces, and I think our nervous systems are calming as more hospital staff trickle in.
That was Dr. Sam Attar from Al-Ahli Hospital. On Tuesday, April 15th, Israel bombed the Kuwaiti Field Hospital in Khan Yunis, killing a medic and wounding 10 people. The Ministry of Health in Gaza said that the attack, quote, confirms the occupation's deliberate intent to inflict greater damage to the healthcare system and threaten the treatment of the wounded and sick, even in their hospital beds. The ministry warned that Israel's crimes against medical facilities, quote, will not cease as long as there is no firm stance from international and humanitarian institutions. Because of Israel's ongoing closures of the crossings, banning all humanitarian aid, the director of field hospitals in Gaza told Al Jazeera that they have lost 99% of cardiac catheterization and heart surgery services in Gaza. The Gaza government media office stated on April 16th that the health situation is, quote, entering a phase of complete humanitarian collapse due to the systematic blockade and starvation policy imposed by the Israeli occupation forces on civilians and residents of the Gaza Strip. Long lines at the remaining food distribution points have become a tragic daily occurrence in all governorates of the Gaza Strip, the media office added. The occupation has targeted more than 37 aid distribution centers and 28 food banks, which have been bombed and rendered inoperable as part of a systematic plan to impose starvation as a tool of war against civilians. Quote, "What is happening in the Gaza Strip is not a passing crisis," the office added, "but rather an organized crime of starvation that amounts to a war crime perpetrated by the Israeli occupation forces with international complicity and silence." UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, reported this week that medication shortages from Israel's blockade is leading to severe health catastrophes. The agency profiled several children who visit the medical point to have burn wounds treated and to receive essential medication, including an 11-year-old boy named Mohammed, who has burn wounds. However, UNRWA says due to a critical shortage amid a ban on aid supplies imposed by the Israeli authorities, the doctor is often unable to provide him with the full course of treatment that he needs. As his doctor explains, quote, "We're supposed to adhere to a strict burn protocol, providing patients with sufficient medication and dressings for proper at-home care. But with supplies so limited, Mohammed must come to the clinic daily for ointment application and wound care." A physician who leads one of the agency's medical clinics in Gaza City said that, quote, "Standard medical protocols are simply not feasible here, with around 30 patients arriving at the dressing room at a time, many of whom are war wounded or children with severe burns requiring immediate dressing changes. We are forced to rush. Doctors cannot rest for even a moment during their shifts. Moreover, the doctors and caregivers themselves are displaced, having lost their homes, yet they continue to come to work every day, providing medical care to all who need it. We are doing everything we can, but the conditions are dire. We make do with what we have, but the severe shortages of medicine, painkillers, and other essential medical supplies pose a grave threat to the lives of our patients and exacerbate this medical crisis." On April 12th, the Gaza government media office stated that in addition to the banning of all food and medications, more than 2.4 million Palestinians in Gaza are being deprived of clean water, quote, "turning water into a tool of genocide and a weapon of slow murder." Israel has systematically targeted water infrastructure, halted supply lines, destroyed water stations and wells, killed water repairmen, and cut off electricity and fuel needed to operate water and sanitation facilities, the media office stated. The office affirmed that Israel's deliberate deprivation of the population of water constitutes a war crime under the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, a crime of genocide, as concluded by the reports of the UN International Commission of Inquiry, and a flagrant violation of the precautionary measures issued by the International Court of Justice, which called for ensuring unhindered access to water and food for the residents of Gaza. Israel murdered a reporter this week in Gaza. Photojournalist Fatima Hassouna was killed along with her entire family in an Israeli strike on their home in the Tufah neighborhood of Gaza City on April 16th. Her colleague Anas al-Sharif wrote this post in her honor. He says, quote, "Fatima Hassouna, the Gazan photographer who never left the field since the beginning of the genocide, documented the massacres with her lens under bombardment and fire. She carried the people's pain and screams in her photos and faced death daily without retreating, until the day came when the Israeli occupation committed its last massacre against her. She was targeted along with her home, and she and 10 members of her family were martyred. The occupation doesn't just kill the human being, it kills the voice, the image, and the truth." We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of A Day in Ward B by Donya Ahmed Abu Sitta, writing from Gaza. Her friend, Fida Zakaria, is a volunteer nurse at the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. Doña recently made plans to shadow Fida while she works, quote, to get a closer look at what it is like to be a nurse now during this genocide and to observe what she sees and the people she cares for. Fida works in the maternity unit at Nasser, and Doña spoke to some of the patients who were being cared for there. She also visited the nursery where premature babies were placed under blue lights to treat jaundice. Fida explains that the nursery is beyond capacity at the moment. There is a constant fear among staff that a lack of fuel and supplies will cause disruption to the nursery and the fragile lives cared for within. Doña spoke with Narmin Al-Astal, a young mother who was in extreme distress. Doña writes, quote, she was pregnant when Israeli forces attacked her home in northwest Khan Yunis. Narmin was not at home at the time, but her husband and children were. He was buried under the rubble for days and survived. She had thought he was dead, but two of Narmin's children were killed. Soon afterward, she gave birth via a C-section at Nasser. I found it hard to fathom becoming a mother after your two children had been killed. I saw another friend, Hanin, who is a nurse at Nasser. She told me about her patient Malak, who was pregnant when her home in Khan Yunis came under attack by Israeli forces. Malak's husband, 5-year-old daughter, and their fetus were martyred. Malak had her foot amputated and is still being treated at Nasser, yet Hanin said that she expressed the wish that she had been killed with her family so they could all be together. I walked back home after the hospital visit, the sun still high in the sky, thinking about the mothers at Nasser and the children in the nursery under those blue lights. Those are excerpts from A Day in Ward B by Doña Ahmed Abu Sitta, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. Abdurrahman Ismail, a journalist in Gaza, played soccer in the street on Tuesday with his good friend and our beloved contributor, Abu Bakr Abed. Abdurrahman captioned his post, quote, have scored a goal today after an assist from Abu Bakr Abed. We are trying to find solace amid the horror. Here are clips of Abu Bakr and Abdurrahman playing in the street.
Yalla! Oh!
And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza.
You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.